Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm an American, so I always assumed I'd be famous. When it was clear I was no Thurston Moore or David Byrne, I figured I could at least be a crusty hybrid between Malcolm McLaren and David Geffen. And so, in an unlikely move for this black sheep in a family of 24-karat fleeces, I became an entrepreneur and started my own small record label. I ran Obnoxious Records with my girlfriend, whose album had come out as our third official release. Louise and the rest of Obnoxious had no clue about my devious parentage. When I moved to San Narciso, I lopped the heart off my infamous surname, synonymous as it is with money and evil, and went from Charles Grossheart to Chuck Gross. With the help of this punk pseudonym, I was able to keep things pretty separate and figured my notorious bloodline would easily remain discreet from my true passion, my real life.
That's Daniel Hornsby reading the opening paragraph of his novel, Sucker. Former Beta guest Kevin Wilson describes it as exceptional, horrifically hilarious, and deeply original. And he is absolutely right. Sucker can be described as equal parts Theranos scandal mixed with HBO's Succession. The result is one of the greatest combinations of horror and humor since Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. And yes, I know it's actually pronounced Frankenstein, but in my home and native land of Canada, we pronounce it as Frankenstein. Daniel joins us now to talk about the novel, how he managed to pull off this balance of horror and humor, and where this idea came from.
So it started out as a joke between me and my friends, you know, around the time of the Elizabeth Holmes scandal really hitting the public. You know, we were just joking, oh, like, what if Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, you know, they were vampires? And then the more I thought about it, the more I realized, thinking about tech and its relationship to our lives now at this kind of late stage, parasitism and vampirism really is a good way in. If you think about, okay, we have these little devices leeching all our data and giving that away without our consent, really. We have the kind of siren servers, venture capital. You have some kind of overt vampiric imagery with, you know, some of the rumors about Peter Thiel and the Blood Boys. And this kind of pervasive quest for immortality that seems to be shared among the CEOs of Silicon Valley, the kind of founder set.
Yeah. Sucker has been described as John Carreyrou's book about Theranos, Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in Silicon Valley meets the HBO series Succession. Were they influences that you drew on while writing Sucker?
You know, I had a pretty complete draft of the book before I dipped my toe into Succession. The Carreyrou book is truly the kind of Bible of the Theranos implosion. And so I drew a lot of details from that, trying to kind of chart the rise and fall of the company and, okay, where were they at this stage in their development? What were they doing with the FDA? Charting that and outlining it so I could find my own evil parallel universe version. As far as Succession goes, yeah, I did want to withhold that from the book as an influence just so that I could have my own take on the super rich. But what I did use was some of the kind of supplementary materials that would, you know, like pieces about the show sometimes that would do these deep dives into fashion or some of the objects in the show. And they would point me towards other things, other sources that would help me get a sense of how the super rich live.
Mm-hmm. Your novel takes place in San Narciso, the fictional city that is the setting for Thomas Pynchon's novella, The Crying of Lot 49. Why did you decide to set it there?
You know, I'd only been to San Francisco one time before I started writing this book, and that was maybe a year before Facebook went public. So I saw the last kind of gasp of that maybe idealized older version of the city where you could stay at a hostel with your friend for 30 or 50 bucks a night. I realized, like, it's a city with so much history, such a dense map and geography, that I really didn't have the expertise to figure out how this would kind of work in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco, in the Bay Area. So I started thinking about how other writers have kind of taken on the strategy, the taken on California especially. And there's Pynchon San Narciso is this like parallel universe city between LA and San Francisco that shoots up quickly, you know, after the Second World War, has certain nodes of industry in it, like this fake Yoyodyne Corporation. And it seemed like, oh, I could build off that and revisit it 60 years later. Some of the bands, some of the topography could be the same. And in a way, it made sense to me because there's been this kind of hyper acceleration and deterioration of San Francisco just with tech. And they've really projected their visions and their own narratives onto the city in these zany ways that feels aligned with the Pynchon verse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was wondering if another reason for using San Narciso as the setting is that the word itself, the name itself, is very similar to narcissism. Was that part of the appeal or did that not enter into it?
Pynchon came up with the name. And I like the idea of this mirror, right? It's this mirror world. And part of my ideas of parasitism, too, I wanted to kind of feed off of Pynchon's world. And so I could appropriate the bands, I could appropriate the neighborhoods and be my own little literary vampire, so to speak, and suck some of the blood out of that and use it for my purposes.
Very well said. Yeah. Let's talk about your protagonist, Chuck Gross. Can you tell us a bit about him?
Yeah. So he is, like I said in the little excerpt there, he's the black sheep in a family of 40 carat fleeces. He is the son of a sinister billionaire who's responsible for maybe the death of half of the fauna on the planet. Someone deeply wrapped up in the fossil fuel refining industry, tied up in other kind of dubious business ventures, weapons manufacturing, things like that. So his dad is disgustingly rich. He's trying to find his way in the world to get money from his trust. He needs nominal employment. And so he goes to his Harvard classmate who has started this little biotech company. And she gives him a job as a special advisor in ethics. And so with that in place, then he can get money from his trust, keep his punk label going, and hopefully keep his punk persona separate from his business bro and true identity.
Yeah. And this old college friend is named Olivia Watts. What can you tell us about her?
You know, Elizabeth Holmes is funny because she really does seem like a black box. There have been a couple puff pieces to try to humanize her that seem like maybe part of the PR as they were doing the sentencing. I'm not really sure. Really, it's kind of clear. Like, she's willing to lie to get a bunch of power and money. And she had a kind of anti-charisma, right? I don't think she was, like, incredibly masterful of language. I don't think that she doesn't seem like the kind of person who could do that. And yet she did it. And I think, like, it's more interesting for me to kind of tell the story from Chuck's point of view, someone on the outside. And Olivia is just somebody who has the Elizabeth Holmes core, but has absorbed some other useful narratives into her own story. Like, she's a survivor of cancer when she was a teen. And so she has this actual true story about her own health that can move people and get investors to give them money and things like that. I would say that she's a little more shrewd and a little more savvy than Elizabeth Holmes in some ways.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about the name of the company she runs. The campus is this sprawling, fancy campus with pine forests and deer and things like this. And her company is called Kenosis. What is the meaning of that word?
Yeah, it's a theological concept that comes from the idea of, like, emptying yourself out so that God may fill you. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that it has the same, it scans like Theranos. It has a kind of a techie ring to it, but it also, you know, touches on some of the vampiric themes too.
One of my favorite scenes in Sucker is when Chuck goes to visit his family on their private island where he spent his childhood. And there are zebras all over the grounds and Chuck and zebras kind of clash. What is the deal with the zebras?
Okay, so I went to Kansas State University for college, and so that's in Manhattan, Kansas. So it's like very close to the middle of Kansas. And to get to the airport, to get to Kansas City, you know, you're driving east along the highway. Sometimes you would see these zebra just behind a fence, kind of in the distance it's like a kind of fancy house. And it always sparked my curiosity. I did a little research, and apparently there's someone who's pretty well off who has his own micro herd of zebra. And I think maybe 10 years ago, one of them got loose on the highway. That always amused me. And that overlaps a little bit with, you know, where some notorious billionaires in our country live, you know, in Kansas. And so I thought it would be nice to wed those two things.
Mm-hmm. Was that a reference to the Koch brothers? Do the Koch brothers live in Kansas?
Yeah, they do.
Were they a model? Because I've read somewhere, I think, that Chuck's father is kind of modeled after the Koch brothers. Is that
fair to say? Definitely. Mm. I think they're in the mix. I mean, you know, living in Kansas, their influence was everywhere. Obviously, their influence is everywhere because we don't have any reasonable climate policy.
I've read that you like to draft things by hand, and I'm curious about why you like to do it that way.
Yeah. Something about the drafting process lets me really feel like, okay, this is what the reader is experiencing at this time. It sets up a challenge to just tell a story in order with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then later, as you enter it into the computer, you kind of get that second draft. You're at draft two by the time it's in your word processor. And that gives you a body of text for things to stick to. So if you resequence things, at least you still have that kind of initial draft where you have that sense of order and discovery.
Yeah. In my limited attempts at writing, I find that there's less pressure on myself if I'm writing by hand, because then it feels more pure to me. And also I don't have like a computer in between like that.
Yeah.
So it feels more direct. Would that be fair to say on your behalf?
It keeps you from backtracking for sure. And I think, you know, the arc of a project, of any book project, is going to be 3 or 4 years at least. And I think in the short term, where you're just trying to discover a new project, it's really nice to have a pretty little notebook that you're just trying to fill with good stuff and get a sense of completion instead of dropping things into the abyss of the word processor and crossing your fingers.
Did you write an outline for Sucker, or did you just start writing and see where your muse took you?
I did. Once I had the engine of the voice, this somewhat self-aware rich jerk Chuck, I then wanted to just see, okay, what kind of beats do I want to hit? Where can I take this? I was reading a lot of Patricia Highsmith, who I think is really the master of plot and psychology and the ways that plot and character actually become kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I love Patricia Highsmith. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. Yeah. And so I was working at a diner in Memphis at the time, a kind of diner bar. And I had one of those guest checks. One night there was a thunderstorm. It was really slow. I had the bones of the first chapter, and from there, just plotted out the rest, well, the first half of the book, at least, on one of those guest checks that you get, you know, with the kind of teal, itemized lines.
Yeah. Lewis Black has said, how do you satirize something that's already satirical? Was that something you had to deal with while writing Sucker?
Yeah. I think some of the horror elements actually were my way into satirizing the super rich and thinking about tech, which can be kind of hard, right? Like there's something about, for example, Mark Zuckerberg calling his company Meta after the Neal Stephenson book Snow Crash, where you think like, that's what you would do in a dystopian novel. That would be the name you would assign his company. There's a Soylent Green VC funded food company named after the science fiction movie in which Soylent Green is a product. You know, you eat people. That's what Soylent Green is.
Yeah.
It makes it tricky. But I think the horror element, the vampires, allowed me to dial it up and have it those higher stakes and also this true abyss that is behind everything. That allowed me to make like different kinds of jokes about the brutality of the super rich and the tech founder class.
What was the biggest challenge you faced writing Sucker?
So my narrator, my first person narrator, Chuck, is a liar. And I think a lot of the book is his account, but also a self-serving origin story that explains why he is where he is at the end of the book.
Mm.
So he's a liar, and his friend, benefactor, Olivia, the founder of My Evil Theranos, or More Evil Theranos, is also a liar. And so trying to figure out through the murky shower curtains what was actually happening as he's telling a lie, she's telling a lie, I really wanted to make sure that there was a Highsmith-like causality chain that made sense to me. And so tracking that and then figuring out what would be the most self-serving lie for either of these people that became tricky.
What's next for you? Are you working on another book yet?
I am. So I'm working on a book that follows a group of eco-terrorists at sea as they plot to take out a mega container ship. You know, these vast shopping mall-sized ships that, you know, essentially keep our economy going, keep the global economy going. They ram, you know, along the coast of California every year, maybe 6 blue whales wash up. And many more humpbacks, gray whales, from ship strike from these massive ships. And so this is a group that is plotting, maybe bombing or taking out one of these ships as a kind of gesture to, you know, get people's attention on what the global economy does to non-human life.
Interesting. Looking forward to that. Dan Hornsby, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Sucker.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Daniel Hornsby is the author of the novel Sucker. Find out more about Daniel and Sucker at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Aparna Nancherla, Sam Lipman-Stern, and Daniel Hornsby.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
He's not a man of many words, so that was a lot for him.
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
I guess you could argue most love comes from fear, so really he's quite deep.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
That's so true, Doug. Who's Doug?